Good morning, family. I feel like it's the end of May, first part of June. Always, for me, these past 2 months always feel like I've worked harder than the other months. I don't know, but I've been busy on my farm. So I'm going to show you a few pictures about that first. But what we're going to talk about today is I'm going to try to answer two simple questions, and that is, equipped for what? we've talked a lot about and driven a lot about we need to be fully established, fully equipped. But equipped for what? And the other thing I want to talk about is just to show you, I've been doing some work in my own development on church-based theological education. And I want to share a few items. It's going to be a simple morning about what is that? What actually is CBTE? So that's what we're going to do today. But without further ado, I want to show you a few pictures because I love these pictures. So this is a picture of, I am actually standing in, now wait for it, I'm standing in my neighbor's field. This is my neighbor's field here, and this is my field here. I was operating that sprayer. Daryl, that's the sprayer. I ran over a deer antler with that thing. It hit, and I got out. I didn't know I hit it, but I got out of the machine, and I heard a not a good sign when you've got $2,000 tires on this thing a piece. And I heard, and I saw the front one going down. I thought, oh man, I got one tire bad. And then I looked at the back, and the deer antler was stuck in the back one. What are the odds of all that thousands of acres of hitting a silly deer antler? Where's the hunters in this group? Go get those things. Okay, that's beside the point. I'm standing in my neighbor's field, but look how green this corn is. Doesn't that look great? It's uniform, it's even. As a farmer, that's what you're after, is uniformity. You're after everything looking the same. You want it to be the exact same height. You don't want any gaps like this. Anyway, but sometimes when you don't have anything to measure it against, you don't really knows what progress you're making. So comparing yourself to the neighbors can be a healthy thing. So this is another picture I wanted to show you. This is that same field. I'm standing on the sprayer now. There's my father. And as you know, a lot of the reason I farm actually yet or take the time for it is to spend time with my father, is to work with my father. And so we were working together there, and he's so excited about how this field looks. But it's interesting, what we talked about is, why are we doing it? For what purpose? Why are we doing this? And it made me think this week about equipped for what? So my dad and I were talking about what, because this crop is going to live, it's going to die. You guys are getting all the rain. We ain't getting any rain, you know. As farmers, we complain about that. But for what end? For what end? And I went to pick him up on a different day, and boy, he was just so excited because the day went so well. And I thought, what makes a person this happy when he looks this dirty and has worked this hard in that heat? Because he was laying underneath that planter for the last hour. What makes him that happy? How can a person be that happy at the end of a day? How do you get fulfillment from your work? So these are the things that have been stirring in my mind this week, which is, I'm trying to pull you into that to help you understand. That's why I want to talk about this morning. Equipped for what? Why do we keep talking about becoming fully established? For what purposes? And then what is church-based theological education? So I put these numbers down here. because in agriculture, now Brian, you might actually know what some of these numbers are. Do you know what 5.5? 2.5? 35.5? Population, yeah. So the, but this is 5.5. When you look at this field, we want all of our seeds to be 5.5 inches apart. We want all the seeds to be 2.5 inches deep. We want the population on an acre, which is 43,560 feet squared, to be 35,500 on the average. Brian's delivering our seed to us. This is the, on 2,000 acres, this is the amount of square feet in 2,000 acres. And then this is the miles per hour it takes that we're driving in order to cover that many square feet. So I'm a data guy, and so that when you look at this picture, I want to see plants 5.5 inches apart across that many square feet. So the reason I bring that up as well is because when we accomplish our work, we can't just do the work without managing some details. And that has implications, I think, for our own progress in church-based theological education, is we have to manage the details of it. We have to manage the daily life aspects and the daily habits of it. So, again, I'm a numbers guy. I'm motivated by numbers. But you have to manage all these numbers consistently, and this is just a beginning of the things you have to manage. But get the idea? Are you with me a little bit? All right. So, last week, this passage was used as a way to communicate that we need to continue to be fully established. So let me read it to you. Actually, what I might do is, this beginning of this year, I started a new habit where every morning or every other morning, I journal. And I have a four-step process. I read a couple books on it, and I didn't like any of their methods, so I made my own method based on some of the stuff I've done in the build courses. But one of the things I wanted to do was, they want you to, I write, but I'm going to memorize certain passages. And one of them I memorized at the beginning of the year was Colossians 2, 6 through 8. Now, I memorized it in the NRSV. So this is the Tom Wright's version. So then, just as you received King Jesus the Lord, you must continue your journey in Him. You must put down healthy roots in Him, being built up brick by brick in Him, and established strongly in the faith, just as you were first taught, just as you were taught, overflowing in thanksgiving. That's the NRSV version, thankfulness. So the first song we sang actually has echoes of this in it, because it talks, that first song we sang is all about being thankful for your faith. Watch out that nobody uses philosophy or hollow trickery to take you captive. These are in line with human traditions and with the elements of the world, not the King. So in the NRSV, it's therefore continue to live your lives in Him, rooted and built up, established in Him, just as you were first taught, abounding in thanksgiving. See to it that no one takes you captive by a philosophy or empty deceit according to human traditions, which are elementary teachings of this world and not of Christ. So what Paul is saying there is there's a set of teachings that the world has, and there's a whole bunch of those teachings, and at the end of the day, they're empty. They're empty. And then there's a set of teachings of Christ, and we have to all be established, rooted, built up, brick by brick, in those teachings. So, here's what we've done the last few months. In March, if you recall, in January, February, and March, actually, we've been going through, we made a tool, the Romans booklet, did the biblical theology work on Romans. and the first 11 chapters being the gospel, the kerygma, the really unpacking of all of that, and then 12 through 16 is really how now you're going to live, the didache aspect of it. April, we had Easter, which where we talked about biblical worldview and accomplishing our work. And we also talked about becoming fully established, biblical worldview versus ways of the world, which ties right back into this Colossians 2 passage. In May, we talked about God, idolatry, and cosmic perspectives. Caleb did a couple teachings on that. Randy had a teaching in there. And then June, July, we're going to do the earlier. That's not true, actually. We're doing the middle letters, aren't we? I think I messed that up. We're doing the middle letters, which are earlier than the late letters. That's what I meant. Much earlier than the late ones. All right, so trying to get your head back in the game here. These are the questions I want you to... I haven't given you a lot of... I'm kind of assuming that you've been here for in and out at least for the last 4 months. So you're going to have something to pull from. These are the questions. These are the questions, and those of you that haven't been here or are new, or your neighbor's going to help you get into these questions. But first question that I want you to talk about is, what is the result of being fully established, that is fully mature? What is the result of it? And what are we being equipped for? Equipped for what? Is how I would say that simplistically. Equipped for what? I had someone say to me, it wasn't any of you or anyone in our church family, but they said, I remember very, very well, a few years ago, they said, "You guys talk about being established so much. I don't see any biblical grounds for it, and you're just trying to establish yourself into heaven?" And if you think about it, that doesn't line up with this, actually. That question, it's a good question in a sense because it demonstrates where you are with your thinking, but it doesn't, if you can truly get your mind around this, what the author intends with these words that he's using here, which is partly why I say to you that I've memorized this one because I want it always in the back of my mind, then that question, you can answer that question pretty quickly if you can truly understand that passage. Because this is it. Paul is telling us to become fully mature. He says, rooted, built up, and established. All three, all the same word. So based on that, the answer is to question one. What is our educational system? I'm talking now, number one is kind of a broad question. Number two is us. What is our family, this family, this church family, what is our educational system for becoming fully established? What is it? That's a pretty, you should know the answer to that one. That one's pretty straight up. What is it? And how would you evaluate your own progress? How would you evaluate your church's progress? And for me, I can give you a picture of what I see. If that field is half planted, that's fine, but it's just half planted. Or if it's yellow, then it's yellow for a reason. And what is your progress in this? This field's not planted on the right. This field is planted on the left. That's what I'm asking there, is how are you personally, and how is your church progressing in the development system that we have? That's question two. And then question three is, how do our initiatives, you remember those 16 initiatives? I talked about them back in January. Some of you I've met with recently to talk about those. How do they integrate into our being fully established? Why can't we just do the work and not worry about being established in the principles? Can't we just do stuff? Do good social things, social justice things, and not worry about being established? Why does that matter? All right, let's talk about it, and then we'll come back and continue. All right, no more discussion time. Doesn't sound right. No more talking. All right, Tim, you got the mic? Let's start over here with the West. We'll call you the West Side. Very affectionate name. I'm mostly spatially orientated, so West. I leave for China on Saturday. It'll be my first time in China. And the first thing I'll do when I get off the plane, actually when I get out of the airport, figure out which way is north. I figure out which way is north. I don't know why, but I got to get orientated. All right. I filled 45 seconds for you. Somebody had a great thought. Andrew, you're on your phone. Give the mic to Andrew. I'm not saying you can't be on your phone. I'm just saying you got something good to say, I'm sure. Any of the questions. You can take a crack at any of them. What'd you talk about?
We were discussing... We'll go to the 3B. So we were discussing... what is the work? Is it good works? What are we talking about there? And why is establishment critical to that? And our thought was that if the tables, and my thought was that if we're just trying to do good work, that's not sustainable. That's not something that we can maintain, and it's not we're not doing it for the right reason. There's no why, and so being established gives us the reason that we're doing that. And another point that we had was that, or that we were talking about, was is good work supposed to be the result of a well-established life? Is that supposed to be the overflowing of being established? Which leads to which, or how are those two related? That was our discussion about kind of the work and establishment relationship.
How tightly are they related? Did you talk about that? No.
Like I said, I think without being established, the work isn't. You can start it, but it's not sustainable, and you don't have a reason why. And so when life gets hard and situations get hard, you don't have the foundation or the motivation to continue with the work. Uh-huh. So you could start off with the work and feel motivated to do that because you've gotten excited about it. But without being established, I feel like that excitement and that motivation will dwindle on its own. Okay. And as far as the work goes, be nice to people. That's easy to do, but there's a lot of complex, tough situations in our lives that we need wisdom to understand and know how to handle and deal with. That's where establishment.
Now you're getting to some real meat, because this. Did everyone catch that last phrase about? There's complex problems in this world, and you can't solve. People are complex entities, and they make complex problems. And you can't solve those problems with, I'll just say it in farmer terms, you can't solve it with pithy little sayings and say, well, just go read Colossians 2. And You have to have a wisdom that you live your life out of that has answers inside of the way you live your life. Yeah, it's good, Andrew. How about the East? You guys outnumber the West by 2 times, so. Oh, we got one more. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I thought I'd take a stab at question one. So we were talking about what are the results or why are we being equipped? And so 2 Timothy 3:16, we're equipped for every good work. Ephesians 3:10, we're equipped to make manifold wisdom of God known. Colossians 2, this passage, equipped so that we're not swayed by different philosophies or traditions.
Yep, yep.
Ephesians 4:11, we're equipped the saints for the work of the service for equipping of the body. And then Daniel had kind of an acronym he liked, you know, when we're equipped.
Daniel the person, Daniel the book.
Daniel the person.
Okay.
That when we're equipped, we're able to defend our faith, direct our lives, and define what we believe.
One more time.
Direct your faith, define your life.
Define your life.
Defend your faith, direct your life, and define what you believe.
D. Excellent, Zach. We'll talk about that a little bit. That picks up the idea of define your life. That picks up the idea that everyone has life work, as a life work. Brian?
On the first one, what's the result of being fully established? I said it was more work, more responsibility, and less time. That sounds kind of snarky, but it relates to what Andrew was saying, right, about the complex problems of life. The more you can handle the principles and the implications that they have on life issues, the more those things are going to come into your life.
Huh.
The more responsibility you're going to
be
given with. I mean, if you're an immature believer and just stay there, there's no. I mean, what is anybody going to come to you for? I mean, what value does that hold for the work? And then on the third one, the last, very last question, you demonstrated early on that I'm not fully established in the first principles of farming. And the reason is I'm not a farmer. I'm a warehouse and logistics guy. So you put me in Don's seat and your dad's seat, and your field's not going to look like what you want it to look like. And so that related to the work, you know, we need to know our role, and that's part of becoming fully established, is understanding our role, what our gifts are, and then being established enough to take part in it.
That's really good, Brian. The first one is, yeah, the more you're established, the more you find yourself, God puts you in those situations, but people can just see by the who you are and what you are that they come to you for answers, the hope that's in you. Yeah, there is second, there is a first principles of farming. Those numbers are first principles of farming. And if you don't space your corn right, horizontally and vertically, you're not going to succeed. If you don't do those two things right, it won't happen. And in this faith, if in this life, if you don't understand the basics of the faith, and have a foundation to put that your faith on it, you're not going to have a good crop through your life. You're not going to have one. All right. So I want to talk a little bit about, this is out of my own work, and letting my own progress be evident to you. And so I've been working through church-based theological education. And so I've simply just taken, this is my work. My words, my work. Not always all my words, but what I like to start off with is, what is the problem? What's the problem we're really trying to address here? And this is the problem. How are most Christians educated in the faith today? We're not going to pass the mic around. I want you to stir these in your own mind. But how are most Christians, when you think about most churches, how are Christians educated in the faith today? What is the educational system that's used? Now, in I can tell you my own story. Growing up in a church, we had Sunday school, then we had the service. I remember a couple things about the Sunday school. I don't remember a lot. I remember the Heidelberg Catechism, first question and answer: what is your only comfort in life and in death? That I'm not my own, that I belong to my faithful Savior, Jesus Christ. But I don't remember any of the 168 question and answers we did in that catechism. Now, maybe I was a poor student, but that was the system. I would say most Christians, the Christian education system for most Christians is Sunday morning for, I don't know what percentage you'd put on it. I like numbers. But I'd probably say 90% of Christians, that's their educational system, is the preaching, the teaching that they would receive. For, let's say, 10%, a lower percentage than that would attend a Sunday school curriculum or attend Sunday school that has a curriculum. For me, as I got a little older, in my early 20s, we went through DVD series, and they lasted 6 weeks. We took eight weeks off or something, and then we picked up another, right? That's the typical, that's what it typically is, yeah? I mean, that's the educational system for becoming fully established. Now, I'm just saying what it is. We have to recognize that's what the field looks like. So this has become a cultural Christian problem. Meaning, what I mean by that is, if I say to a person, we were at the race yesterday, and there were the running dam-to-dam race in Des Moines, and I was hanging out with some of our neighbors who were cheering on the runners, and one of them asked, what church do you go to? I always find that question interesting, because I feel like I'm part of a family. I don't go anywhere, really. I mean, it's not a going, but that question in and of itself demonstrates a cultural problem, because it's about going someplace. The result is that question, it's all across the Western world, and it is global in its influence. When I go to these other countries, you can pick up the same problem, exact same problem. Where do you go to church? We're trying to make a church. All you're trying to do is build a family. You're not trying to build a building. All right, so you have to understand the pervasiveness of the problem. And it is all over the globe. The result is, the so what of it is, here's the result. And this gets to a little bit what Andrew was saying. The result is that Christians have little impact on the world as most believers remain at a very elementary understanding of the faith. And they cannot integrate everything into the faith into their life. The problem is we as Christians globally end up having little impact. Are you following me? Because we all remain at an elementary understanding of the faith. And Edward Farley has this quote, you've all heard it, some of you have heard it before, where he says, how can we be lawyers and doctors and farmers and school teachers and master those trades, and yet when we come into churches, we can't master any of the elementary teachings of the faith? Those people have great minds. We have great minds, and we can master all these great things in our paid work. But when it comes to the Christian faith, we can't master it. We can't master the faith. We can only remain at a very elementary understanding. And so that's the problem. That's the problem we as Christians have. And so our Christian, part of it comes down to our Christian education model is fragmented. The school, the home, and the church all have different agendas. All have completely different agendas. Okay, I'm just trying to, and I'm speaking in broad brush terms here, trying to get you into this, the big conversation. All these three entities are the main places that Christian education should be happening, and they're all separate from one another. That's part of the cultural Christian problem. Schools, now this again, I'm speaking broad brush here, but schools, Christian schools are often, I grew up, I went to a Christian school. My grandparents were huge supporters of our Christian school in our town. And when my grandmother died, then my grandpa and grandmother's a part of their estate, their farm ground, the proceeds went to the Christian school. So my parents were huge advocates of Christian education. But when you look at it, the Christian school that I went to had no relationship with any churches. Maybe we all went to church, different churches, which is fine, but the Christian school had no, it was separate, completely separate. Public schools have no need for church. Homeschoolers often want to avoid the culture. Again, I'm speaking in broad brush terms here. I can remember when I look across the room here, and more than a couple of you, have young kids. John, you brought my wife and I when our kids were, when Elijah was five, we went through Parenting with a Plan with you. Man, I look back on that now. What a perfect timing for our family. Because we talked through for, I don't know how long it was, but we talked through should we do public school? Should we do Christian school? Should we do homeschool? All three can be right for your family. But we had never sat down and said, okay, how does this integrate into our church? How does this integrate with our gifts? How does this integrate into our life? And all those questions. But what John was forcing my wife and I to do is to ask those questions of us, of Leah and I, my wife and I, and of our community, and come up with answers so that we think integratedly and we think holistically about it. But this is the main problem, is they're not integrated. The home, parents don't often understand their role. They don't have the first principles of how they're supposed to shape their households and their children in the Christian faith, and instead rely almost solely on churches and schools to do it for them. And the church, if you go to the church, as far as recognizing this problem, is the churches lack a comprehensive plan for teaching all people in the manifold wisdom of God, Ephesians 3:10, or the whole counsel of God, Acts 20, 17 to 38, that Paul talks about. So churches, we have six-week DVD series, or we have unintegrated things. We don't have a full plan to get everyone in the whole counsel of God. We can say that they're fully equipped. Okay, that's the problem. So just that's the main problem. And I thought this quote was really interesting by Alan Thomas in Beyond Educationalism. Beyond Education, it's in the Paradigm Paper 5 and 6. Talks about it. And it says, the educational system that we have today, that we know today, arose in tandem with the industrial society in which uniformity was the standard and the need of the times. Isn't that interesting? I'm not going to go deeper into that particular statement, but I find that very, very interesting that our whole educational system is based in this era. Well, guess what? You know what the half-life is today of... I remember, meaning the half-life, meaning the, if you learn something today, how many years until half of it's not worthwhile? In the technology at Ag Leader, man, I got a technology degree at Iowa State, and then I started doing work at that company, and man, things were completely different. It's the technology changes so quickly, and we all know that. The last time Elijah was telling me, my oldest son, the last time LeBron James was not in NBA Finals, Instagram and Snapchat weren't even around. And for some of you that don't know what Instagram and Snapchat are, you haven't kept up with the technology curve. That's why you have a 13-year-old son that can mentor you in the technology side, by the way. You have mentors in every decade of your life, every age group, you should have someone mentor you. I'm serious, you should. All right, so the summary of the problem is our Christian education model does not fully integrate the home, the church, the school, and does not truly reflect Christian principles. That's the essence of the problem. So, our proposed solution, here's what we're saying. We, our family, here's what we're saying. We're saying this is a big enough problem that we're passionate about, that we want to do something about this around the world. That's what we're saying. And we're saying, we're proposing a solution that we need a new model. We need a new educational model. In fact, it's even bigger than a model. We need a paradigm. We need a new paradigm. We need a whole different way of thinking about how we educate in the Christian faith. A whole paradigm that integrates the home, the church, the school, and it's based on biblical wisdom for providing the skills for living. Defining what you do is what Daniel said. That's exactly right. That is integrated into equipping all God's people for every aspect of all their life. So that's your life planning, your family life, your work life, your community life, your finances, your where you choose to get a job, where you choose not to get a job, how many kids you decide to have, how many kids you accidentally have, all those things that happen. It gets complex. But all that you sum up as life work. Life work. Your life work. Every person should be a theologian in the sense that you are mastering the faith. Theologians are not people who just go to seminaries. In the old educational model, or the previous one, the problem I was describing, that's what, if you want to get fully trained, you go to seminary. No. What we're proposing is that every single one of us becomes fully mature and can master the faith so that we can have a life work that lines up with God's story. All right, so we call this educational model, we call it church-based theological education. We're proposing that solution, that's the solution, CBTE. CBTE, and this is a review in a lot of ways, but I think we sometimes get inoculated. We hear it so much that we forget what in the world we're doing it for and why it matters and what was the problem we were talking about anyway. So it's called, we're proposing church-based theological education, and here's the basic framework, the very basic framework of the proposed solution. The curriculum has to be organized and based on wisdom principles from the Old Testament and a biblical theology approach. And the curriculum also has to be integrated into a person's whole life work. So everything that Jeff and the rest of the team and us that we've created is to that end. The curriculum is to that end. And the education must be church-based at its core, is the second piece of the framework. Has to be church-based. And what does church-based really mean? Well, church-based really only means, in essence, means two things. And that is, the family is the base for all Christian education. The nuclear family, the husband-wife family. It's the base for all Christian education. That's the base. And the second aspect of being church-based, because people ask me all the time when I travel, what in the world does church-based mean? Well, it just means that the family is the core unit of the core unit, and that the church is a real family. The church is not like a family. The church doesn't... people use that metaphor with me as well. It's not like a family. Your church is a family. We are a family. We're not like one. We are one. The local family is the household of God. It's an extended family. It's a family composed of families. It's a family of families. So that's the essence of what church-based is. Is you can't go to bedside Baptist, meaning stay in bed and not go to church. That's what I did for part of my college days. Where'd you go to church? My mom would call. I went to bedside Baptist. I always thought it was funny. She never did. But it's you're not participating in the family of families. And that's God's plan for our lives, is that we participate with his family, which is his church. And our churches need to function as families, not like institutions. So those are the two core pieces of the framework to church-based education, theological education. So we've been building this curriculum for decades, and we continue to build more tools. When we're building the Romans here, we're doing it in the context of our family. We go through it as a family. So this is from a recent blog post that the team put up. And over in the conference room over there, this is, as you know, these are the leadership series. You got some of the first principles laying here. I wanted to show you something. The wisdom-based framework. I don't know if I can get your head into this, but in the Jewish tradition, in the Hebrew tradition, there's more than three phases, but we'll just say three phases: early adulthood, middle adulthood, and later adulthood. And man, I'm gonna state the sky is blue. Something is obvious here, but man, as I get older, this stuff is just makes so much sense. I wish I would have gotten it yesterday instead of today. But listen to this. If you're in your early adulthood, you need to become well-established in the core teachings of the faith, begin to build a solid family, and lay solid life work foundations. That's what you need to do. That's what you need to be doing if you're in early adulthood. I'm not talking about, this is what? What's early adulthood? 18 to 35, maybe. It's probably early adulthood, according to the Jewish Hebrew traditions, and a lot of Eastern traditions, by the way. I met a 30-some-year-old guy, and everybody was calling him a youth. Hey, youth. I was like, what? Not youth. Yeah, actually, maybe he is. I always thought once you turned 18, you were done being a youth, but not actually in Hebrew tradition, not in a lot of traditions. Middle adulthood, which is be 35 to 50-ish, you need to transition your children into adulthood, serve skillfully in the church, and begin to focus on a main body of life work. Isn't that interesting? Your main body of life work, meaning you have something to accomplish before you're going to die. And only you can do it. Number three. Later adulthood. Which I suppose is 55 and later, right? I need to leave a living heritage, be a resource to the community of faith, the church, and fully complete my life work. Man, when I read those, I thought, it's a great summary from the Hebrew tradition, from the wisdom literature, from Proverbs. I kind of want to spend the next 3 months going through Proverbs now with you. But that's what our church-based theological education system is built around. That's all I'm trying to explain to you. That's all I'm trying to explain. So this is what it looks like a little bit. I thought this picture on the left was excellent. You're struggling to, like, this doesn't make any sense. Pictures tell it all. And I think especially when you compare it to the picture on the right, where Titus and Kevin and the Bergs are, they're just like, we got this. And they're all excited about what they're engaging in it. And then, what's the guy on the right next to Caleb? Peter? Yeah, Peter and Caleb are just at their wits' end with church-based theological education. Like, we don't know what this means. I don't know how this applies to any part of my life, and I'm tired of these Edward Farley words. But it's a process. It's a lifelong process. But, all right. We have built a technology platform to track and assess all of the work. Now, you guys are going to love this analogy, but yes, Jane, you will. When I see green checks up here, you know what I see? I see this. I see this. I see that. But when I see empty green check marks, I see the picture on the right, which is a bare field. Now, we have a tracking system to keep track of how we're doing in the progress we're making. So when I ask you in question two is what progress are you making individually? What progress are you making as a church? This is part of how I as a leader in this family, how I like to monitor the progress. Now, there's a lot more aspects to this, or other than this. How you live, how you talk, a lot of other aspects. But this is a very important aspect. This is how we show our progress in our own training system that we're arguing around the globe for. So one of the largest barriers to getting to accomplishing these green check marks over here is the problem of writing. Writing. The biggest problem is writing. A lot of people can, if you can discipline yourself to engage with your family in these conversations like the Bergs were doing and Titus were doing, that's, you got to do that. What I found interesting this week was this. Reading makes a full man. Conferences make a ready man. But writing makes a precise man. So if you can write it out, what I always find out with writing is, I think it's really clear here, and I think I'm doing a spectacular job here. But when you begin to, which is not true, but you sometimes think those things, and then you begin to write it out, and then you reread what you wrote later, you're like, yay, not very clear. Not very clear at all. In fact, for those in my family, half of them would be able to understand it. The other half wouldn't, because I'm not very clear. And if I gave it to anyone outside the family who has no idea about anything that I'm talking, or I haven't explained it thoroughly enough at all. So writing is a habit that most of us, I don't think, we are not, I think our educational system has failed us. We do not have good writing habits. just in general, which is why in 2018 I've started to try to journal more and try to always write a certain amount of words every day, just to try to train my mind to get things clear. So, writing. This is our training system. We need to read in order to fill up our understanding. We need to discuss it, Socratic discussion with others, in order to gain the ability to understand it and articulate it and defend it. But we write in order to gain precision and permanence in our thinking. That's why we write. It's so we can get permanent, so it can really take root and get and be fully established in our minds. And it's not Jeff Reed's ideas, it's not Michael's ideas, it's not Keith Cook's ideas, it's yours. It's you. You own it. You're writing what you think. And that opens up all sorts of avenues in your life. So you say, why this slide? When I saw this slide, I put it in here intentionally because I thought, this will catch everyone off guard. Let's talk about giving. Woohoo! Right in the middle. So this will make sense to you in a moment, but part of our establishment is giving to our church family. That's how we get to participate in God's family. It's a privilege. It's an absolute privilege. And I think sometimes I treat giving like it's a numbers game. I love numbers. And I like goals. But really, the principle is that we get to participate in what God's doing. So, speaking of numbers, let me share with you the numbers. And I'm going to start sharing with you a little bit differently. But if we took our whole budget, divided it by 52, and assumed we got the same amount every week, which I'm calling a linear budget. Nothing wrong with that, but it is what it is. It's a linear budget. It would be 191, and we've taken in 150. Historically, if you go back to the last 3 years worth of data, at this point we've got 149, 161, 149 respectively in those 3 years. And so in that sense, we're right on target. But my point is not really to share with you that we aren't on target on a linear form, or we are on target historically. We need to talk. This is about us being fully established. We get to participate in what God is doing. So I want to go to the next slide here. I've shown these numbers to you when I teach, right? Y'all remember seeing these, and I just try to keep them in your mind. Well, I have a dream. I have a dream. Another dream. I show you the progress of our financial numbers. I have a dream to show you the progress in the Antioch School and First Principles for everybody sitting here. You following me? This is what everybody's giving cumulatively. But I have a dream. I want to see that for what does it mean to be fully equipped and what progress are we making? I want to be able to show a chart that says, you know what, we are making progress, everybody. We have got 52 people in the Antioch School, or 520, whatever the number is, and we are making this much progress. Can you see it? I think I can see it. Can you see it? Some of you are like, I don't think I can see it. But I want to be able to see everyone I envision it's going to be a cumulative thing. I'm not going to show everyone's personal name up here. Oh, huh. Mark Stevenson hasn't done nothing. Yay. You know, we're not showing Mark's giving up here on this slide. So the negative side of it. I'm trying to chase that. We are challenging everyone to complete their work and to be fully established. The system we use to become fully established is a church-based theological system, and the thing we've built around it is this tracking tool. So I have a dream that we can see that for everybody Right now, we can only track it for the Antioch school. We're not tracking it for the first principles, but we need to be able to at some point. So, stand by. The dream will be fulfilled at some point. I will show you a slide that shows cumulatively everyone and how we're doing. So, just a few more things, and then we'll wrap up. But completing the establishment work and gain ministry effectiveness. I want to tell you a quick story. David Cook. I'm going to put David Cook on the spot. I asked him last night if I could, and he said, sure. So what? So what in all this? So you get green check marks. So you are becoming fully established. For what end? So what? You could just be a head full of knowledge then, right? No. We had a leader leave a church. I don't know how long. 5 years ago? It was 4 years ago. It was a while ago. We had a key leader left one of our churches. And it was not fun. It was hard. But David stepped up and said, more or less, I think he had a few people in his church that said, well, David could do it. And David's like, yeah, not so sure about that. But in essence, he said, I'll lead this family. I'll take these people and I will lead them. I will lead them. I remember some of those conversations hesitantly. He said yes. But soon thereafter, David enrolled in the Certificate of Ministry, which is the first four leadership series courses, the SEMA map, and what else is in the certificate? And the practicum. David enrolled in that. And he said he was going to do it so he could be disciplined and he could prepare to lead this church. That's why he enrolled in it. Help him stay disciplined. Help him make progress. The past 3 years, and I think actually a little bit more than that, Thursday nights, faithfully attended, discussed, and he's completed all his competencies for all those courses. Now, the result has been, in those 3 years, what I've seen, I've not only seen green check marks in his cloud, what I've seen is he has families in his church now who lead the mastering. You have a family that leads the mastering the scriptures. You have a family that's leading all of our youths who are 12 to 16. Your church is, you have done a great job of, you have gotten more couples basically to step up and fulfill their role is what's happened in a 3-year time frame. And so that's I wanted to highlight that because all this is not to the end just so you can get green check marks. It's so that you can be effective. David has been very effective in his work as leading that church. And I think it's due to the fact that he's done his work. He's stayed disciplined on it. He's done his work. He knows what he's talking about. And he owns it for himself. We are consistently becoming established so that getting our work done results in being effective at multiplying churches, being effective at leading churches, being effective at rebuild, being effective at hospitality, being effective at stabilizing the home, being effective at counseling one another, being effective. The list can go on and on. But that's, we're fully equipped so we can be effective at these things. This list right here is not a wish list. This is not a wish list. This is, I know these are grandiose things up here, and the numbers are like, but these are things I really believe these are things that God has called us to do. Now, the numbers I understand can be a barrier for a lot of you to get over, but the numbers aside, these are things God's called us to do. This is not a wish list. These are things that we have to become fully equipped to do. All right. We need to be fully established so we can be faithful to work God's given us locally, regionally, and globally. Do you realize that our global network, we're calling it the CBTE, Church-Based Theological Education Complex Apostolic Network. That's a mouthful, but people ask me all the time on plane rides and stuff. They say, "What do you do? What do you do?" I always hate that question, but because it's kind of a pigeonholing question. What do you do? And sometimes I put my headphones on, act like I didn't hear them, but not always very relational person. But what do you do? Well, sometimes if you say, "Well, I'm a pastor," then I know what that gets me into, right? Then I stand up front and I go to the hospital and I marry, bury, and baptize. That's in essence what people think I do if I say, so I don't say pastor. So I've thought about, over the years, I've tried missionary on people, and that doesn't really work, because then people think I'm, okay, all those things that in that education, in that paradigm, what people think missionary is. So then I've tried farmer. That doesn't really work, because why in the heck would a farmer be on a plane? I mean, unless the farmer's going on vacation or something. I mean, so I've tried pastor, I've tried missionary, I've tried farmer. None of those work. So I've got a fourth one that I've tried out on people, and that is, I'm an educator. What do you think? I'm an education, in essence. That's what I do. And the education I'm about is Christian education, Christ education, the whole counsel of God education to networks around the world. I work with churches. I help them educate their leaders, educate their people. Anyway, if you sit next to me on a plane, I'll tell you I'm an educator. The point is, we have that work to do around the whole globe. We have that. I'm going to China. Steve and I go. Jeff's going to meet us there. And that's what we're going to talk to the whole, all the Chinese leaders about is CBTE. That's all we're going to talk to them about. I'm going to probably repeat a lot of the phrases I used this morning. All right, last slide. I recently met with the Gilbert Cluster leaders, right, Randy? And all of them, right, Brian, are going to enroll in the Certificate of Ministry. Is that true? Yes. All of them are going to enroll in a certificate of ministry and begin to complete the competencies over the X amount of years. I actually was going to put a number up there, but decided against it. Just leave it a little bit more loose for a time. But I share that with all of you because it is very important. It's very important. All people need to be active in our CBTE training system. All of you need to show progress in first principles and mastering the scriptures. I've said that a couple times already this morning, so I don't think I'll say it anymore. But all of you need to work and be engaged in our CBTE system that we have. All of you, on a weekly basis. If you're not in a weekly basis right now, either in your churches or on another day or night of the week, then you need to be. Because that's how you're going to become fully established, is talking about it, understanding it, learning it for yourself, writing it out so that you own it and so that you can fully participate in what God's given us to do. All right, let's pray. Lord, we thank you for your story and what you've, we are such broken people and such a sin-filled world. And I just think about Romans, about how all creation groans in eager expectation for you to come back again. But Lord, until you come back again, you've asked us to become fully established, to mature in your principles. And that as we mature and align every aspect of our life, our entire life work, as we line it up with what you are doing, not line you up with what we are doing, but line our life work up to what you are doing and what you've been doing since the beginning of the time, the way we are to do that is to regularly learn your teachings. So I ask that you would find us faithful in that, that out of all the hours in this week to come, that you would find us faithful in some of those hours of being disciplined in the study, disciplined in the CBTE system that you've given to us to steward around the globe and here locally and regionally as well. So, Lord, to that end, we pray in your name. Amen.